and welcome to Terra Verde, your weekly KPFA environmental radio show. I'm your host today, Gary Hughes, and for today's show, I am excited to share with listeners the experience and expertise of our guest, Paul Hughes, the executive director of the organization Forest Forever. Paul is with me here in the studio to discuss the current state of forest politics in the state in the context of a great deal of concern about wildfire, contrasted with a total absence of concern or even recognition of the existence of high levels of current and legacy logging of the forests in the state. This should be a great show on a very important topic. Thanks so much for being here with Terra Verde, Paul. How are you doing today?
Great, Gary. Thank you for having me back. I want to thank you for hosting me and the listeners of Terra Verde, as well as the KPFA listeners and community radio supporters out there. It's good to be back.
I love the way you frame that. Thank you so much for joining us here with your great energy. I'm really looking forward to doing a deep dive with you about your perspective on what is happening with forest and climate policy in the state this year. First, though, before we really get started, as a sincere greeting to open the show, I want to communicate to listeners that those of us volunteering in the Terra Verde Collective are very appreciative and thankful for all of the listener support for KPFA over the past year. It is very much an honor to be here as community radio volunteers when the support of the community is so committed and generous. On behalf of our entire collective of Terra Verde program hosts, I want to say thank you to all of the KPFA staff and volunteers that make it possible for Terra Verde to be here in the studio on a weekly basis. Our Terra Verde team will continue to work hard this year, bringing listeners news and insights about environmental protection and related social justice issues here in the San Francisco Bay Area, across the state and nation, and indeed around the world. We truly believe in the power of independent community radio, and we know you do too. For those of you who perhaps did not contribute during the most recent fund drive, please do be sure to take advantage of the easy options for donating and supporting KPFA radio in spring 2019 by going to kpfa.org and following the donate button at the top of the page. Remember, community radio truly gets the goods, now more than ever. As we head into the main substance of our show, I want to express thanks and appreciation to our studio guest today, Paul Hughes, from the venerable and authentic California organization Forest Forever, which is this year, indeed, celebrating their 30th anniversary since the founding of the organization in 1989. Listeners who are so inclined can go now to their website at forestforever.org. Check it out online during the conversation to get more details on several of the topics at hand. That's forestforever.org. And we have the executive director of the organization right here. Paul, let's start by recounting some of the history and background of your organization in order to paint for listeners something of a picture of who Forest Forever is and what your organization has been working on over the years.
Thanks, Gary. Yes, we were founded in 1989, the year before Redwood Summer, which is the height of controversy. That was a year in which everything you could imagine was going on to save Headwaters, ancient redwood forest on the North Coast. We were involved very heavily, one of many groups. I don't want to take credit away from anyone, but we were holding down the grassroots organizing in terms of getting out into neighborhoods and communities and letting folks know where they live about the issue, getting them aware of it, activated, writing letters and making calls, while many others were doing tree sits, litigation, regulatory actions, legislation, etc. And all of that culminated in 1989 with Headwaters Preserve being protected. So we were birthed in the Headwaters Forest movement and played a big role in that. But since then, we've been involved in every conceivable kind of forest ecosystem fight you can imagine. And, you know, California is the most diverse state. I'm just going to state that flatly in terms of forest ecosystems. Here we have the tallest trees in the world, the coast redwoods, the most massive trees, the giant sequoia, and the oldest trees, the Great Basin bristlecone pines in the White Mountains of California, live to be over 5,000 years old. And so we've been involved in fights on all of those and every conceivable kind of forest activism since then, playing a key role in the Giant Sequoia National Monument being designated by Bill Clinton, the roadless rule being defended, the clear-cutting issue, in the form of two ballot measures and two bills that we've sponsored, and Jackson Forest, a state forest that's now an exemplar for decent forestry. Could be better, but it's the best going right now. There's a lot more I could say, but it's good to be at year 30. We have about 10,000 members statewide and a fairly big grassroots outreach infrastructure.
And the canvas has always been like one of the, you know, bedrock organizing tools at Forest Forever. I mean, when we think back to your speaking of Redwood Summer, and you know, there was actually the ballot initiative.
Yes.
On, you know.
Yes, it was.
I mean, just such an important part of the history for.
And thanks for mentioning, because I do want to underline that birthed us. We formed in order to sponsor the ballot measure, Prop 130, which became known as the Forests Forever Initiative. And even though we were outspent about 6-1, we came within just a couple of percentage points of victory that year against big lies. You know how that goes. And we've been organizing ever since, feeling very encouraged by the body politic to not let the fight go away.
And I think it's really interesting what you bring up as well. The recognizing and celebrating the diversity of forest types here in mm-hmm. the state of California. Mm-hmm. And you brought up the redwoods, you know, the redwood temperate rainforest. We'll get back to that, some of the stuff going on in the Sierra. But Forest Forever has also really been at the front of the pack, as it were, trying to draw attention to California's oak woodlands. Could you
Thank
speak
you.
A little
yes,
bit about
I was
that?
Just going to mention that we've also evolved in the direction of moving toward more local campaigns as the years have gone on. We're still a statewide organization. Our focus is California as a whole. But we worked in recent years to pass an initiative in Napa County, which came very close in 2018. The Napa Oak Woodlands and Watershed Restoration and Protection Initiative. I think I've got a few extra words in there, but that fight continues. We're very much a part of the Richmond Hills effort to save 430 acres
right here in the East Bay.
Oak Woodlands in Richmond, and other local fights, including the Matole, which is an ancient Douglas fir forest area in Northwest California. We may get a chance to talk about that.
Well, no, let's go with that right now. I think it's a really important topic, and I think listeners should really know, though this is something that we've touched upon on previous broadcasts of Terra Verde, where we've really tried to dig under the surface a little bit of about this rhetoric of California presenting itself as this global climate leader. Mm-hmm. And one of the contradictions that I think listeners would be really interested in learning more about is that though California on a global stage is suggesting that protecting forests is, you know, the imperative that it is, at the same time, now Forests Forever has been working with a lot of local groups up on the North Coast in the Matole watershed of Mendocino County and Humboldt County to basically protect old growth forests from industrial logging, which is stunning to think that in the year 2019, the state of California is still ready to put a stamp of approval on logging plans for old growth. Can you tell us more about what's going on up there in the Matole?
It's shocking. The Matole fight, the Rainbow Ridge fight, I should call it, it's better known as, is in Humboldt County. It's on the Lost Coast, a storied area, one of the most unusual biogeographic provinces and subcultures in the United States. It's very isolated. It's very earthquake prone and landslide prone and heavily forested. There aren't that many roads of note in the area, and so the forests have gotten by pretty easy compared to a lot of places. But Humboldt Redwood Company, the successor to Maxam's Pacific Lumber Company, wants to log off Rainbow Ridge, which is one of the last strongholds of ancient Douglas fir forests. Now, this is about 30 miles southeast of Eureka, and it's on Humboldt Redwood land in the Matole River watershed. Rainbow Ridge sits in between the Humboldt Redwood State Park to the east, where the largest grove of virgin redwoods left in the world, the 9,000-acre Rockefeller Grove, is found. It sits between that to its east and to the west, the King Range Conservation Area, BLM managed. It's an important corridor connecting those two areas because it allows the flow of moist ocean air over the ridgelines into the Humboldt Redwood State Park. And without that flow of moist air and the fog drip that can accumulate in the ancient redwoods, our state park there, the Rockefeller Grove, Humboldt Redwood State Park, will suffer very greatly. It should be code red for the state park system to save Rainbow Ridge as a conduit to keeping Humboldt Redwood State Park alive and well. It also is the home to a rare species called the agaricon. A lot of folks may not have heard of it. It's a conch-type large fungus that grows the size of a beehive and in about the same shape, and found associated almost entirely with Douglas fir exclusively. And it is very rare and will be disappearing if the ancient Douglas firs at Redwood, at Rainbow Ridge are logged off. It has medicinal purposes and as well as a lot of cultural relevance. We have been working with groups including the Lost Coast League, the Mattole Restoration Council, EPIC, which is a group that you were executive director of for years, and working to publicize the danger to Rainbow Ridge, to get press releases out there, generate letters and calls to Humboldt Redwood Company, do grassroots organizing, social media, and so forth, and have been helpful in stopping the logging that was planned to go ahead at Rainbow Ridge last spring. Since then, the update is that we, the group that's working on this, have filed a complaint with the Forest Stewardship Council saying, hey, you shouldn't be giving a green certification fig leaf to Humboldt Redwood Company when they want to log old growth forest and when they're using herbicides liberally. And since then, we've had some response from their auditors, from Forest Stewardship Council's auditors, but largely we're being stonewalled and we're being led down the path and not really being responded to in a meaningful way. They've sided with us on some of our complaints, but have not gone far enough and have not followed through. And we've got to pressure them to keep on because they apparently think this will just go away.
This is really an important download for listeners to be catching up with you, Paul, about everything that's happening up there with the Rainbow Ridge. And Rainbow Ridge, of course, was a site of incredible forest defense movement because the in some ways these same logging plants had been floated by the Charles Hurwitz-controlled Maxim back in the day. And if Humboldt Redwoods Company is supposed to ostensibly represent different management direction, as they've promised to the community on the North Coast and also across the state and many stakeholders in Sacramento. I mean, what do you say about this contradiction that Humboldt Redwood Company is still looking to log some of the oldest trees, oldest forest on their holdings? I mean,
The area we want to save, about 18,000 acres of Humboldt Redwood Company land in the Mattole, includes about 1,100 acres of virgin or nearly virgin Doug fir stands and prairies and other mixed hardwood and conifer forests that have been never entered or lightly entered. And those are extremely important not only for habitat and recreational purposes, but for carbon sequestration. You know, the Cascadia Siskiyou bioregion, which extends from Humboldt County all the way to southeast Alaska, is the deepest carbon sink in the Western Hemisphere, if not on the planet. And for us to squander that by logging off the ancient forests and destroying their carbon-trapping soils in the process is incredibly wrong-headed in today's context of fighting global warming.
Well, it is just totally absurd that the state of California will say that so much is being done to address climate change through, focusing on the land sector. And at the same time, the state agencies are getting ready to greenlight logging of old-growth forests. It's one of these great contradictions that, you know, we in Terra Verde have put a lot of energy into trying to bring to the attention of KPFA listeners because it really is of incredible importance and it needs a lot of public attention. So, folks, you're tuned in to Terra Verde on KPFA 94.1 FM. My name is Gary Hughes, and I'm speaking with Paul Hughes, no relation other than the fact that we love the Redwoods. But Paul Hughes is the executive director of Forest Forever, and we've been getting in just now to a really important matter that Forest Forever has been working on regarding old growth forests up on the North Coast in the Mattole watershed. But I would like now to switch channels a little bit because you are working on a lot of different topics. And I want to get into the issue of wildfire. And in particular, what I want to look at is the work that Forests Forever is doing in regards this kind of unending chain of efforts by previous and current governors of the state to relax bedrock environmental law, mm-hmm. to allow for more logging, though it's cloaked as being a certain sort of quote-unquote treatment in the guise of protecting from wildfire. But this is not actually what's always playing out on the ground. So is it easy to describe what's going on with this current state of affairs around wildfire and California's forests and the politics involved with it? I know it's an onion that could be hard to peel.
The politics are especially intense right now because there's an atmosphere of political panic going on. I say that advisedly. It's relative, but the panic is let's do something now, anything, because the public is clamoring for action. And, we think there's good prospects with Gavin Newsom. We had a great relationship with him and feel strongly about his environmental credentials from his time, even back as far as being a city supervisor in San Francisco. His father was a great conservationist. So we're very optimistic about where Gavin can go, and we get the urgency of acting fast politically. We understand he needs to do something right away. What we need to do is make sure that he pivots quickly away from the Brown administration orientation and the orientation of the first couple of weeks and months of this governorship toward hardening homes and buildings and communities as the far and away top priority, and not putting dollars and resources and even human lives at risk fighting wildland fires and going into too much thinning and too much salvage logging. Salvage logging is the emphasis of a lot of the grants and projects that are going on right now.
And when you say salvage, it's the post-fire salvage.
It's mostly post-fire, meaning that a fire has gone through an area. It's done a certain amount of it's killed a certain number of trees, although I'd hasten to add most of the trees after a wildfire are not killed. So when you hear 30,000 acres of forest were, quote, destroyed in the news media, what that really means is a few thousand acres of trees were killed and are standing snags. Virtually none were ashed and nuked to the ground, and all the rest were burned in mosaic fashion and will recover.
That term mosaic is so important for listeners to have in mind when we mm-hmm. think about the impacts of wildfire in a forest ecosystem, that there really is this mix of severity, the lesser severity, the medium severity, and the high severity
low,
fires.
Low, high, and medium severity fires, and they are fairly equally balanced. By no means are the forests destroyed by wildfire. In fact, we have science that very clearly shows that the regeneration of snag forests, that is forests that have been affected by fire and are recovering, the biodiversity that comes back rivals that of old growth forests and, in fact, in some cases exceeds them. And so arguably the most valuable ecosystems we have in the forests are old growth, vanishing quickly, almost gone, and snag forest.
The post-fires.
Right up there with it. Now, you mentioned salvage logging has to do mostly, in the context we're discussing it, with post-fire salvage, removal of trees after fire's gone through. But it can also refer to fire prevention logging, or so-called sanitation type logging, where there's an effort to go in and knock down fuels and thin and reduce
fuels treatment, mechanical
before
thinning.
Before a fire happens. Yep. The greater danger is probably salvage logging. We think that's more after the fires, and that's probably where more effort is going these days.
Because what you're saying is, and this is really important, that post-fire forest ecosystem is one of the most rare and ecologically important forest succession states that a fire, like a forest could really experience.
It is a snag forest. A dead standing tree forest is an incredibly rich ecosystem. We're only now beginning to understand that. Cutting-edge scientists like Chad Hansen with John Muir Project, Dominic Della Sala with GS Institute, and many, many other scientists, not just them, are coming up with great studies showing that snag forests are underrepresented in today's landscape on account of many decades of fire suppression. Think of Smokey the Bear and everything that happened after World War II. Even going back to the 1910s, we had heavy fire suppression. So for many decades, there's been a fuel buildup due to fire suppression, well-intended. But what it did was it took away snag forest habitat, reducing the biodiversity, actually reducing the proportion of fire-affected snag forest in terms of the total forested acreage on the landscape compared to where it had been historically. We've got less snag forest now, even with all the recent major wildfires, than we had before fire suppression in the early 20th
century. There's still a fire deficit on the landscape. We know that there's a lot, and we want to get into this. Really, the point that you're making about hardening the home sites and protecting from the home out, there's definitely important work that can be done in terms of protecting our communities and homes from wildfire. But really celebrating and recognizing the importance of fire on our landscape, the fact that our forests are fire evolved, and that there's actually really a deficit of fire still, even with these tremendous events that have happened the last couple of years. And then also this idea about dead standing trees and how important they are. I try to ask folks to think about a dead standing tree as an apartment building for wildlife, or to remember that in California's old growth native forest, the original forest that, for instance, if you go to Headwaters Forest Reserve and you get into, you know, a patch that's many thousand acres large of old growth forests, it's, you know, one third of the standing trees there are actually standing dead trees. Mm-hmm. And so that standing dead trees are an intrinsic part. They're in a very important part of, you know, a healthy native forest.
In fact, old growth forests, the best definition of what an old growth or ancient forest is three things. One is dead standing trees or snags. Secondly, down trees on the forest floor, dead again. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, dead snags in the streams and waterways that create pools and riffles for salmon and invertebrates and so forth. So it's very important that we not spend money on thinning and so-called fuels reduction projects at the expense of home hardening and working, as you say, from the house outward rather than from the wild land inward. The wildfire problem we have is a home ignition problem, not a wildfire control problem. What we need to do, by the way, of solutions is reduce the flammability of existing homes and prevent new buildings from being built in areas that are high fire hazard. That's where our dollars and efforts should be going. Unfortunately, there's a bit of inertia still as we try to get this message out there. And we've got projects, multi-million dollar projects, dozens of them rolling out right now to do salvage logging, to do all kinds of backwoods thinning and fire prevention work, to the detriment of spending that money on home hardening. And home hardening, I'm talking about things that, like this, if you have ember-resistant vents in your attic, it's going to keep embers, which can fly a mile in the air, way across 12-lane freeways and playing fields and the rest. Forget about fire breaks. You know, they don't pay attention to that. Embers will get into your attic right now, get sucked in there and torch the house. Ember-resistant vents prevent that. Fire-resistant roofing and siding. We've got folks still using redwood shakes for roofing and exterior sprinklers. Very effective. Vegetation management within 100 feet of the
defensible space, the fundamental defensible space concept.
Getting rid of the shrubs, getting rid of the low ladder fuels on the big trees, but leaving them there. They provide shade and trap moisture. Those are some of the kinds of things, and on a bigger scale, politicians can enact zoning to keep construction out of fire areas, changes in insurance requirements. If you want to build in a fire area, you've got to pay the insurance and not put it on the taxpayer to send choppers out there and rescue your home. Tax rebates and incentives and a lot more. Those are the things we should be doing, and we want to see this pivot happen as soon as possible, like I mentioned, away from salvage logging.
Okay, so Forest Forever is working on this pivot, and we only have a couple minutes left. So I want to make sure, once again, to mention to listeners that you can check out Forest Forever at forestforever.org. You can find it on the website and learn more about these topics that Paul is describing, and as well follow some of the information there to go deeper on this pivot. But, you know, in this last couple of minutes here, Paul, can you make sure that listeners get a feeling for what people can be doing to get involved, what people can do to follow the work that Forest Forever is doing, and, you know, just any other sorts of last you know, important messages that you want to make sure that people go home
sure,
with
Sure, you mentioned our website, forestsforever.org. That's all one word, lowercase, forestforever.org. We're also on Facebook, have about 10,000 followers on Facebook now, and that is the key part of the address is Forests Forever California.
Okay.
That's the Facebook page that we're at. So like us there, and we have a lot of posts to follow all of this, as well as our website. Three things that folks should be thinking about doing to take away from this. One is home out, not forest in. Harden the homes, put the money into the places where we're going to save lives. And it's not going to happen creating fire breaks out in the hinterlands. There is lots to do, and a lot of money needs to be spent there. Two, salvage logging is the biggest harm to the forest, even greater than clear cutting, because even though you take the nutrient capital off the land in both cases and take it to a sawmill where it can't be recycled into the soil, in the case of salvage logging, they do it with expedited exoneration or exemption from rules, environmental oversight, and in some cases even judicial challenge. And they do it fast, they do it without the oversight, and they damage the soils much more because there aren't the road building strictures that there are with clear cutting. The third takeaway would be that dead trees, dead snags and standing dead trees are no more flammable than live forests. Now, this may sound wildly counterintuitive, but a massive science is now emerging that shows that when a tree dies, the fine fuels and volatile oils dissipate very quickly after it dies. And every year after a tree dies, it is less flammable than a green forest, especially when it's down on the ground. It's a sponge soaking up water. Take those three ideas with you from this interview.
Well, thank you so much, Paul. You know, it's been really great to have you here, and I am really excited to have shared with listeners some of these, you know, important concepts about the pivot that you think and from your experience know that California needs to make on these very important forest and climate policies. So, Paul, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
I want to thank everyone who tuned in today to Terra Verde. We're here every Friday. Again, you can check out forestforever.org to get more information about the work that Paul is doing. I want to give a special thanks to Mike Cohn, our engineer, and without whom this unique KPFA programming would not be possible. Remember, you can listen to the archives of this show and others on kpfa.org. We hope you join us next week at 2 p.m. for Terra Verde. Enjoy your Friday afternoon and have a great weekend.
Oakland Ballet Company presents Jazz Vistas, a celebration of Oakland's jazz and blues musical legacy with new dance works by six Bay Area choreographers and live music by members of Oaktown Jazz Workshop with special guest vocalist Tiffany Austin. Performances are Friday and Saturday, April 5th and April 6th, in the wheelchair-accessible Little Theater at Berkeley High School on 1930 Alston Way. All proceeds benefit Oakland Ballet Company and its educational programs. Get your tickets now at www.oaklandballet.org. Again, www.oaklandballet.org.
This is listener support. sponsored radio, KPFA, KPFB, Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, K.